Welcome to Throwing Mountains Weekly Strength. I'm your host, Chris Bollinger. For the next 12 or 13 minutes, we're going to draw strength from the Bible. I encourage you to make this a daily practice on your own. This is the ninth episode in the series on big topics in the Christian life. Today's big topic is restoration. The Bible passage for this episode is Job 42, 10 to 17. I'll read it from the ESV, the English Standard Version. And the Lord restored the fortunes of Job when he had prayed for his friends. And the Lord gave Job twice as much as he had before. Then came to him all his brothers and sisters and all who had known him before, and ate bread with him in his house. And they showed him sympathy and comforted him for all the disaster that the Lord had brought upon him. And each of them gave him a piece of money and a ring of gold. And the Lord blessed the latter days of Job more than his beginning. And he had 14,000 sheep, 6,000 camels, 1,000 yoke of oxen, and 1,000 female donkeys. He had also 7 sons and 3 daughters. And he called the name of the first daughter Jemima, and the name of the second Keziah, and the name of the third Keren-hapuk. And in all the land there were no women so beautiful as Job's daughters, and their father gave them an inheritance among their brothers. And after this, Job lived 140 years and saw his sons and his sons' sons 4 generations, and Job died an old man and full of days. What's your favorite Bible translation? Does it really matter which one you choose? Sometimes it does. In fact, the translation or mistranslation of a single word of the Bible can make a big difference. It may even skew your view of God in a critical area, such as restoration. I spent most of my career in tech sitting at a Windows computer. Today, even though I spend way too much time on my phone, I probably spend even more time on my Windows computer. I read the Bible on my phone and my computer. On my phone, I use the YouVersion app. On Windows, I go to BibleGateway.com. I never realized how many Bible translations there are on Bible Gateway until I looked today. There are 63 English translations. I have no experience with at least half of them, but one of them makes me cringe. It's the Good News Translation, sometimes called Today's English Version. My first Bible was a Good News Translation Bible, or a Good News Bible. I got it after I went through 2 years of Lutheran catechism classes and was confirmed at the end of my 8th grade year of school. Here's the marketing blurb on the Good News Translation. It's a common language Bible, a clear and simple modern translation that is faithful to the original Hebrew, Koine Greek, and Aramaic texts, and it's a highly trusted version. It may be highly trusted, but when I was a teenager, I found some of the translations to be really confusing. One day I was reading the Gospel of Mark when I came upon this in Mark 13. You will see the awful horror standing in the place where it should not be. Note to the reader, understand what this means. Then those who are in Judea must run away to the hills. Someone who is on the roof of a house must not lose time by going down into the house to get anything to take along. Someone who is in the field must not go back to the house for a cloak. How terrible it will be in those days for women who are pregnant and for mothers with little babies. What was this awful horror? I had no idea. It sounded really bad. The text told me that I had to understand what it means. I didn't. And I didn't know where to go to gain understanding. Back then, I didn't have access to the internet. My Bible didn't have any footnotes for that verse. And I didn't have any other Bibles with different translations handy. I was left confused and frustrated. Frankly, it made me a little wary of the Bible. But it didn't shake my faith, and I figured that if I really needed to understand the awful horror, I'd go to my pastor or somebody else who knew the Bible well, or at least better than I did, and ask him what it meant. Bruce Wilkinson was a pastor. He knew the Bible really well. In fact, some would consider him to be an expert on the Bible. And he didn't have to rely on the Good News Translation. He had a bunch of different translations at his disposal. But he still felt uncomfortable with a passage in the Bible. Actually, it was a single verse in that passage. One short phrase in that verse, a verb really, didn't seem right to him. That passage was the beginning of John 15. Here's the setting for John 15. Jesus and his disciples, minus Judas, have just finished the Last Supper. They've left the upper room and are walking together. When they enter a vineyard, Jesus says this, which I'll read from the NIV, the New International Version. I am the true vine, and my Father is the gardener. He cuts off every branch in me that bears no fruit, while every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes, so that it will be even more fruitful. Wilkinson was unsettled by the verb cuts off, which also is translated as takes away. Here are some examples. ESV, every branch in me that does not bear fruit, he takes away. King James Version, every branch in me that beareth not fruit, he taketh away. Revised Standard Version, every branch of mine that bears no fruit, he takes away. Contemporary English Version, he cuts away every branch of mine that doesn't produce fruit. Even the Message, which is a paraphrase, he cuts off every branch of me that doesn't bear grapes. Why was Wilkinson unsettled by this? Every branch in Jesus is a follower of his, a Christian. What happens when a Christian doesn't bear fruit? According to this passage, God cuts off or takes away that Christian from the vine, or Jesus. So what does that mean? Is the Christian no longer a Christian? Is he no longer saved? Let's say you're going through a dry spell in your Christian life. You still believe, but you're really not using your spiritual gifts, at least you're not using them like you used to. You're not showing much evidence of the fruits of the Spirit: love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Instead, you're depressed. You're angry. You're anxious. You're frustrated. You're worrying. And you're sinning. How long can you go like this before God cuts you off? A year? A month? A week? For a long time, Wilkinson struggled with the idea of God taking away or cutting off followers who aren't bearing fruit. Then he met a man who owned a large vineyard. As they sat over coffee, the man told Wilkinson the finer points of growing grapes. New branches have a natural tendency to trail down and grow along the ground, he said, but they don't bear fruit down there. The man explained that when a branch grows along the ground, the leaves get coated in dust. When it rains, those leaves get muddy and mildewed, and the branch becomes sick and useless. Wilkinson asked the man what he does with a sick and useless branch. Cut it off and throw it away? Oh no, the man replied. The branch is much too valuable for that. We go through the vineyard with a bucket of water looking for those branches. We lift them up and wash them off. After the conversation, Wilkinson investigated the Greek word arrow, which most Bible translations say means cuts off or takes away. A better translation of arrow is takes up or lifts up. With that translation, John 15 takes on a whole new meaning, one that is perfectly consistent with what the vineyard owner told Wilkinson. When a branch falls into the dirt, the gardener, God, doesn't throw it away or abandon it. Instead, he lifts it up, cleans it off, and helps it flourish again. Because he is a good gardener, God takes whatever steps are necessary to restore the branch. In his book, Secrets of the Vine, Wilkinson writes that for Christians, sin is like mud trapping us on the ground. How does God lift us from that mud? Sometimes he must use painful discipline to bring us to repentance. One of Jesus' disciples experienced this restorative discipline. Jesus had given Simon the name Peter, which means rock, and told him, "On this rock, I will build my church." But in the hours after Jesus taught about the vine and the branches, Peter denied Jesus three times, not to people in authority, but to servants and common people. Peter was not a rock. He was a coward. On Easter Sunday, Peter raced to the tomb and found it empty. Sometime later that day, Jesus appeared to Peter and then to all the disciples. But Peter still was swimming in guilt. He couldn't lead others. He could barely function. A few weeks later, Peter decided to go fishing, and some other disciples joined him. They caught nothing all night. Early in the morning, a stranger on the beach told them to throw their nets on the right side of the boat. They did, and they caught 153 fish. The stranger was Jesus. Peter didn't know what to say to him, so Jesus did the talking. Three times, Jesus asked Peter if he loved him. The third time, Peter was hurt and defensive. Jesus had exposed a wound that Peter had opened by betraying his Lord. But Jesus had to do this because otherwise, the wound never would have healed. Gently but firmly, Jesus told Peter that he would be a faithful follower from that point forward and would die for his faith. Forgiven and restored, Peter became a new man, a new creation. If you're a follower of Jesus who has not been bearing fruit, even for a long time, you still can be reconciled to God and restored to what you were designed to be in the first place, the righteousness of God. Once you're restored, you could become like the restored Peter and be an ambassador for Christ, entrusted to share the gospel with others. The gardener is near, with his bucket of water in hand. Next week, I'll look at another big topic, reward. Please join me for that. And please pick up a copy of 52 Weeks of Strength for Men. You'll find it to be a good resource on this journey. Have a good week, men.